Do we know who's going to run it?
You can.
I'll just kick it off.
Yes, because...
Okay, all right. So I'm going to kick off the joint OCTO-RSAC meeting. Welcome, everyone. We've got a full agenda, and I'd like to start by saying, you know, there's been a lot of back and forth between OCTO and RSAC, and we've been emotionally riled up to the point where David is so choked with emotion, he's lost his voice. Okay? So my apologies if I've given you grief. All is well.
I'm used to it by now.
All right, so I think first on the agenda is KSK rollover, right?
Well, shall we run around the table?
That's true. Yes, okay. So you're absolutely right. This is a public meeting. Okay, I'll start, and then we'll just go clockwise and go around the room and to the back. Tripti Sinha, University of Maryland, co-chair of RSAC.
Mauricio Vergara, ICANN.
Darren Kara, ICANN.
Bradford, VeriSign, co-chair.
Lars-Johan Lima, NetNode, member of RSAC.
Vicky Risk, ISC.
Fred Baker, ISC.
Jeff Osborne, ISC.
Naila Saras, INA, functions operator and ICANN staff.
Ryan Stevenson, DOD.
Russ Mundy, SSAC liaison to the RSAC.
John Crane, ICANN alternate and RSAC member of the ICANN OCTO team in many of her hats.
Suzanne Wolf, RSAC alternate. USC.
At West Hurst, University of Southern California.
So, Daniel Migo, IAB RSAC liaison.
Kathy Peterson, ICANN.org, Office of the CTO.
Matt Larson, ICANN.org, Office of the CTO.
Mario Aleman, ICANN staff supporting RSAC.
Steve Shannon, ICANN staff supporting RSAC.
Kove Rangeberg, RIPEN CC.
David Conrad, ICANN CTO and rhinovirus carrier.
Could you just quickly just say where you're from and announce yourself?
Rick Wilhelm, VeriSign. I'm from Taiwan.
Kazunori Fujiwara from JPRS.
Peter Gordinik.
Michael Cassidy-Duval, freelancer.
Mikhail Anisimov, DotRU Registry.
Carlos Alvarez, ICANN SSR team.
Okay. And we've got many others online as well. Welcome to all of you. And with that said, where's our sick colleague? Go ahead, over to you.
So I believe we have some slides loading. I think actually to save my voice, I might throw this over to Matt. This is a talk on the KSK rollover.
Hello, everyone. I think rather than go through this entire presentation, Steve, could I ask you to advance to slide 6, please? It's a table. Yeah, I'll just sort of recap. I've given this presentation once already, and I think two or three times more, and people have either seen it or will see it. So I won't do the whole thing in the interest of time. But let me just highlight the schedule. So so very briefly, we earlier this year, or I guess it was actually late last year that we announced our intention to solicit input from the criteria. On input from the community on criteria to proceed with the root KSK role. And so we asked for input on a mailing list called ksk-rollover at icann.org, which everyone should please subscribe to, ksk-rollover at icann.org. And we got some comments there that amounted to endorsement to continue the KSK role, but to keep reaching out and doing the media push. And you're getting the Cliff Notes version here in the interest of time. And what we did after that then was on February 1st, and this is where we pick up on the slide. On February 1st, we published a draft plan that called for the KSK roll to occur on October 11th, 2018, exactly a year delayed. And this then is our hoped-for plan for how to proceed from now until October 11th. An important point, though, is that the plan we published is a draft plan, and we're really serious about that. It is a draft plan. We want community feedback on that. So to that end, there's a public comment period open right now. It's been open since then. It closes on April 2nd. There's a distressing lack of comments so far, so it would be great if we could get more comments. And based on the feedback we get, we will revise the plan as necessary. And, you know, the revisions depend on what we hear. If the revisions don't cause us to alter the timeline up here, then this is what we envision. Mid-April, then, we'd publish the staff report on a public comment, which happens after every public comment, and the revised plan. Then there's a board workshop in May, and we'd ask that the board ask ESSAC to review, and then based on discussion with Kaveh, I'm sorry, the slide has not been updated, we would also kindly request ARSAC if they would be willing to review the plan as well at that point and provide feedback. Then in ICANN 62, we'll have another session for feedback, and then by August 1st, we would hope to receive the ESSAC and ARSAC feedback on the plan, make any revisions, publish the final plan in mid-August, and in September get a board resolution with authorization to proceed on October 11th. So that is what we're looking at in terms of scheduling. And so I guess the main thing I'd like to do here today, in addition to just updating you and asking everyone to please consider making a public comment, is to just, I guess, semi-formally ask if ARSAC would be willing to review the plan and provide feedback, if that's something that the committee could do. We'd be very grateful.
I think the answer to your request is yes. We'd love to review the plan, and we look forward to it. Is there, I don't know, have any of those questions about like what the impact to the root system might be, if there is any, if given the numbers you're seeing and data that you're seeing, I don't know.
I'm sorry, what's the question?
Has there been any research or thought on what the potential impact to the root servers, if any? Maybe the answer is none. I'm just curious if the question's been asked, that's all. I know it's been asked in our group, so I thought I was sharing it.
I think the running assumption is that there won't be any impact to the root server system itself. It'll just keep resolving queries as usual, and if it returns a signature over the key set that somebody doesn't have a trust anchor for, then that person will have a bad day. You know, some resolvers do get more aggressive when they encounter bad signatures. So it is possible.
You mean like a re-query or something?
That
like
sort
that.
Of thing,
Yeah. You know about that. All right. Any other questions for Kaveh?
So one of the suggestions that came up, because there is a logic to this plan, and the board resolution will be in May, but we know for a fact that there will be a resolution. We don't know the content of it, but we at least know the relevant questions from ARSAC. So one of the suggestions, both for ARSAC and ESSAC, and it was also discussed with ESSAC, I know, is to we can be proactive before the resolution. There will be a resolution, and then based in that resolution, ARSAC and ESSAC will be formally asked to look into that and provide advice. But we can be proactive. Nothing is stopping us to start thinking about that from today. And even if we have advice, board is more than willing to receive that before issuing that that resolution in May. The reason for the May is basically that 2nd of April should pass. There should be the staff report published. There is a three-week period for the board to be able to make a resolution. So there is some bureaucracy involved, but it shouldn't stop us from actually thinking about the issue if we choose to.
Russ?
Thanks, Brad. In an effort to try to get a little head start, I know that the information is out there, both the plan and, you know, the open public comment. It probably would be helpful to ARSAC, and I know it would be me for the ESSAC liaison, to get the current set of pointers to the actual rollover plan and the public comment, and you know, have either John or Terry put it on the list so it's there, and we can do, you know, our public comment response as individuals, and also start reading the plan so we have a better idea of what it's going to say when some actual tasking shows up.
Okay, I can send an email with that to Brad and Tripti. Okay.
Yes, we will disseminate it. Thank you. Any other questions?
So I'm going to move the agenda around a little bit because David needs to go to a different meeting. So David recently did a presentation to the board to talk about concerns regarding DDoS attacks to the root server system, and we're also talking about hyperlocal routes and so forth. So he's going to do a quick review of that discussion, and then I think he needs to bolt, and we'll continue on with the other agenda item. Thanks. Over to you, David.
Thank you. So this presentation is a result of a request from the Board Technical Committee and I guess Shireen to talk about what ICANN, the organization, can do with regards to what the board is increasingly seeing as an existential threat to the root server system as a whole and to ICANN's role as part of the root server system. This presentation and the board paper talks only about what ICANN, the organization, can do, because that's the only thing we really control. And that was reiterated to the board on a number of occasions, that this is not talking about a system, regardless of what the title says, but says specifically about what we can do within the context of ICANN.org to try to address some of the concerns related to denial of service against the roots. Next slide, please. So a lot of this was setting the stage to make sure the board members understood that the DDoS threat against pretty much any target on the internet today is actual real. And made reference to the 1.7 terabit attack against GitHub as a result of the mcached vulnerability, and did point out that it only took 10 minutes to mitigate. However, the real issue there is that if, say, the root service was down for 10 minutes, it wouldn't really matter if that had that much of an impact from the context of the board, because it would call into question ICANN's ability to help coordinate the Internet system of unique identifiers. It would probably result in congressional testimony and generally a bad day for the board members. Nothing else really to talk about on this slide. Next slide. Provided some information as to what Okta's view of what the main causes for this are. It's been pointed out that it isn't really only IoT devices, because mcached isn't an IoT-related vulnerability, but our concern is driven largely by the proliferation of devices with essentially crappy security, and as a result, creating an environment in which it's relatively straightforward to create a denial of service vector of essentially unlimited capacity against any sort of infrastructure that does have limited capacity. Part of the contributors to that is the fact that, you know, it's still trivial to spoof addresses, and amplification is increasingly a concern. The sort of the takeaway on this was that there isn't an easy way to address this on the supply side. And because we can't address it on the supply side, we have to look towards solutions on the receiving side. Next slide, please. So the board was specifically interested in options that ICANN can apply unilaterally, so that ICANN.org can apply unilaterally. And those were to expand the L root, both in terms of the L single deployments within hosting organizations, as well as L clusters. One additional version, which is talked about in the paper but not so much talked about in the slides, is the idea of working with cloud providers Talk a bit more about that later. Encouraging hyperlocal root server deployment. So basically, as I'm sure you're all aware, mirroring root contents into more closely to the edges, either into resolvers where they support authoritative, or in an authoritative next to a resolver, and addressing that via 127.0.0.1 or something like that. Or even you could even view the L singles as another form of hyperlocal, one that's more traditional in deployment. Research DNS protocol enhancements, some like the Hammer draft that Warren put out, or the TTL stretching, looking at trying to encourage deployment of things like NSEC aggressive use and those sorts of things, all aimed at providing improvements in the protocols to help address denial of service and the risks associated with denial of service, understanding that none of them are silver bullets, that each one will address a small bit, but you know, every little bit helps when you're trying to beat back massive denial of service. And there were a couple of other options that within Okta we didn't feel were worth pursuing, but have been mentioned in numerous places, and we thought the board needed to be made aware of that. Next slide. In terms of expanding L, it's basically adding more Anycast instances, whether it's a small instance in the case of L single, or adding creating new clusters. We currently have three clusters. We're looking at adding additional clusters. That's an expenditure by ICANN, non-trivial expenditure. The L singles deployment are the cost. Most of the costs are handled by the hosting organizations. There is some administrative overhead that has some relatively small amount of expenditure, but this is something that we can do completely unilaterally, obviously working with partners. The big point here is that this is not a sustainable solution. We do not believe that we can continue throwing hardware and bandwidth at this problem and stay ahead because of the proliferation of IoT devices and vulnerable systems that are connected at high bandwidth. We just don't think that anyone, not just ICANN, but anyone can win that race. Next slide. The hyperlocal, I'm sure it's been discussed a number of times here. A form of hyperlocal is 7706. That's not the only one. There are a bunch of others. We, within Okta, feel that it is probably the most appropriate midterm solution for the denial of service threat as it currently exists. It's not an exclusive. All of these things have to work and play well together moving forward. But having the hyperlocal approach means that any denial of service attack would be targeted at the entity who has much greater ability to control the input of that attack, presumably going out and turning off their customers that are starting to hammer them. We feel that this is a scalable and decentralized solution, but decentralization does have downsides. It means we lose visibility into what's happening within the context of the root service. There have been arguments that it is operationally more fragile. We can have differences of opinion about that. I personally think it's a self-correcting problem. If somebody misconfigures something of this nature, they'll have quite a significant incentive to fix it. But we still believe that this is the best medium-term solution for addressing a existential risk to the root servers. Next slide. There are a bunch of DNS protocol enhancements that are ongoing right now. I won't bore you all with going through them, but they include improving the resiliency of the protocol in the case of denial of service, but also changing the underlying transport protocol to try to get away from the sort of the sucking chest wound that is amplification source spoofed UDP packets. From ICANN's perspective, you know, the actions that we can take here are just, you know, continuing to support the research into these enhancements, funding prototype and pilot implementations where appropriate. The issue there is that to have any impact on the denial of service risk, it's sort of a long time horizon. Getting the code out and deployed to a point where it'll actually have a meaningful impact on denial of service is undoubtedly quite a long time. Next slide. The other options I mentioned, so, you know, if you sit down and do the math, you know, 13, we learned quite some time back, is not a fixed hard number. There are now 26 IP addresses in the priming response, more or less, you know, depending on which server, you get more V4 or V6. We didn't think this was worthwhile pursuing as an active measure against the denial of service because it is non-sustainable, just like adding more instances. In fact, it really is just adding more instances. They just happen to have different IP addresses. It doesn't really solve any problem and creates just an incredible incentive to buy popcorn to watch the political fallout. Similarly, there has been discussion about the idea of whitelisting and filtering at the root servers. So the idea there is you, as a large resolver operator, can go to the root server somehow and say, here is my IP addresses. Please prioritize queries from this IP address. Folks who are not prioritized would be the first to be dropped or could be dropped at all times. This obviously does not address any denial of service that's based on volumetric. The ones that are attacking the routers in front of the DNS servers, this wouldn't help at all. It is also likely to be quite politically charged because some would argue that it would go against the idea of the permissionless internet. In this case, you would actually, if you're a resolver operator, you have to ask for permission to have your queries answered. The counterargument to that is, well, then those folks could just do hyperlocal, but we just felt that this is a Band-Aid on a much more serious problem, and this particular solution, which undoubtedly people will deploy just to protect their own infrastructures from attacks, isn't one that is appropriate in ICANN's context. Next slide. This slide just summarizes the six options that we explored with the board, and I'll open it up to questions at this stage or comments, screams of outrage, any of the above.
Thank you, David. I thought that was very helpful. I think this echoes a lot of what's gone on within the root operators and in their practice. So this is isn't necessarily new. I do have a couple questions that I'll ask based upon. RSAC had the we got a hold of this early, so there were a couple questions that were brought up, and I'm going to channel the group by asking them. So don't kill the messenger, but. First question around hyperlocal. There was a kind of a clarification was either needed or asked for in that this doesn't enable localized damage in the event of a DDoS, or at least we didn't see that. Or the discussion was, since it's at the resolver, the attacks would be coming directly to the roots. It would certainly keep the resolver working, but it doesn't mitigate the attack to the root server system
Yep, very true.
It's really hard to talk about because attacks are so complicated and the attack vectors change all the time. So this addresses one of the attack vectors. And
right.
It's not, yeah. And I guess some of the discussion was that needed to be a little bit more clear.
Sure. Yeah, the focus here was, and that's why I apologize for the title, it's really on resiliency as for root service as opposed to the root server system or root servers or anything like that. It's the ability to get the referrals from the root so that people can then, you know, query, you know, down the tree to get the names resolved. So the focus here, the interest really, is on trying to figure out ways of protecting root service. And in that context, hyperlocal would provide root service because the root is brought in, and if you're experiencing a denial of service against your resolver, then you, as an ISP, would be able to identify the clients that are beating the crap out of it, or do, you know, RRL, or, you know, the whole variety of things that you can control as the network operator. The question about denial of service against the root in a hyperlocal environment. You know, that gets back to the same problem that we always face is the only real answer we have at this point in time is throwing more capacity and more anycast instances at the problem. And that's why I said that none of these are exclusive. We're going to have to do all of them. And, you know, in the end, until we address the larger problem of ensuring, you know, that spoofing continues to be a problem, or the amplification doesn't continue to be a problem, we're not going to be able to solve all of these problems.
Can I ask a real quick terminology question, David, which is the usage of the word hyperlocal sort of popped up out of the middle of nowhere, and I know you guys have an internal project working with NLNet Labs and I think ISC and other stuff to get stuff deployed into a code base. Do you consider hyperlocal to be the generic term for caching locally, or is that a code word for your specific project? And if not, do you have a word for your specific project I can refer to it as?
The term hyperlocal is actually something that I believe Steve Crocker had coined to reference. Well, actually, I should say this is my interpretation of Steve's term, which is replicating the root zone locally. And then serving that root zone locally. There are a variety of ways that can be done. 7706 is one of the ways. As I suggested, L singles could also be seen as a hyperlocal approach, right? Because you're bringing the root zone closer to the edge. So it's intended to be a generic term, meaning a generic term that references a concept of replicating the zone locally. With respect to the effort to improve the code base, I will let you in on a little secret. Internally within ICANN, we don't necessarily communicate all that well together. And I actually do not know what Terry's group, who is funding the work with ISC and I guess NLNet Labs, is actually doing in terms of the hyperlocal. So that's a question you should direct towards Terry at this stage.
All right. Thank you for that clarification. Is there any other questions? Yes.
When fusing hyperlocal, is there a concern that that would in some ways make maintenance and upgrades to the root more fragile? Because then you're dependent on the hyperlocals to download new top-level domains or key rollovers, or if there's large protocol changes. Because if some of the larger DNS resolvers, say like Google or OpenDNS, switch over to hyperlocal, and for whatever reason they get stuck on an older version, wouldn't that in some ways hamstring ICANN's ability to update the roots?
So my view on that is that we have to assume that people are responsible adults. If I believe, I don't know if Warren's here, I haven't seen him. My understanding is that Google does do a hyperlocal implementation that Google will never query out to the root servers. We have to assume that they will follow appropriate timers associated with the SOAs for the root to pull down updated zones, and that they won't let the zones expire, either the signatures or the actual data itself. Similarly, I think my understanding of the work that Terry's team is doing, or funding rather, is to try to make it turnkey so that the people who choose to deploy hyperlocal will not shoot themselves in the foot. You know, this is in some ways similar to sort of what we're experiencing with the KSK rollover. We're finding upwards now of 20-plus percent of resolvers that are reporting 8145 data are showing RFC 2010 only, which suggests that they're going to be having a bad day. However, this is a self-inflicted wound, and when they do have a bad day, they will remedy it if they feel the need to. It might be, you know, fun to not be able to resolve anything with the NSSEC. Similarly with hyperlocal, if there is a misconfiguration that causes a zone to expire, and I'm not too worried about the zone data getting stale, because if it does get stale, then the signatures will expire, and the data will, the server will serve fail. But, you know, if someone is not, actually keeping the data up to date, then, within a week or so, whatever the timers are, I haven't looked in a while, they will start getting phone calls on their support line saying, why can't I resolve anything? And it's a localized failure within the service area of that resolver.
Okay, thank you.
I can channel Warren for you really quickly because I had a conversation with him. Google does not regularly keep hyperlocal support actually in their servers. I think they might have the ability to turn on. I can't channel that side of them officially, but he did tell me that, no, they don't normally do that.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I was going to add that we see lots of queries from Google to our routes. So.
I see.
Jeff was next in the queue here.
Dave, when you describe the concern of the board as feeling this is an existential threat.
Yes.
Those of us, you and I have been doing this a long time, and there are always risks and always threats and always things you can imagine that are pretty awful. Mm-hmm. Are you concerned this is kind of like this happens to be happening, or do you genuinely see a tipping point coming that is, you know, in the offing that requires radical action?
So my impression I can give you my opinion, but I don't think that's actually relevant. My impression is that there are board members who believe that the proliferation of IoT devices has actually fundamentally changed the game, and that this is an actual threat to the internet as a whole. And the only area in which ICANN has impact is in the area of root service. So they're, in the view of these board members, their view is that, you know, we have to at least do what we can do to try to protect the part of the internet that we have some control over.
Wes was first. I'm sorry, Russ was first. Russ, then Wes. I'm sorry. Michael.
Thanks, David, for a lot of good information here. I think part of the problem that we face is indeed something we've talked about both in RSAC and SSAC for a while, and that is the difficulty in trying to understand how the root server system as a whole is performing. As part of this effort to examine, you know, how to improve things, has there been any additional thought given or additional impetus put into how we might go about doing the measurement of the system as a whole?
There's been some informal discussions about doing additional studies, additional mechanisms by which we can establish behaviors and gain more information about how the dynamic system is actually operating. But that hasn't, that I think, I'm trying to channel board members here, I think their view is that that is just day-to-day business of my team, and when they have specific questions that they will then submit those to RSAC or SSAC. I don't think there's, I don't think beyond saying, yeah, we need more data, that they've given it a whole lot of thought.
Wes?
Actually, I would actually defer to an actual board member here, and, you know, if he wants to correct my statements at all.
So
No, I think actually it's a very good summary. In board, especially the issue of IoT, which is now the talk of the day, has been brought up multiple times, and I think that was a very fair summary of how some of the board members feel. And you also have to understand, it's hard. I really appreciate this type of work because it shows what can be done to mitigate those fears, let's say. But how realistic those fears are, that's something which actually is very hard to argue within ICANN framework because most of them are IoT, and it will be really hard to spend board time to educate them on IoT, and which is completely is out of ICANN remit. So there's also that thing in play as well.
Yeah, and I will say that in the spectrum of board members, I can state authoritatively that there are people who feel that they are surprised that you don't wake up every morning and the internet, the root service is completely burned out of existence because of denial of service, to the other extreme where it's like, this is, you know, internet is going to die every day. This is MPEG at 11. It's not a big deal. So part of this exercise, the board was basically looking for proposals that the org could implement in order to address the concerns that some board members see so that then they can think about the cost-benefit analysis.
Michael, you had a question?
So one other question, though, with Hyperloop...
Wes asked the question. I'm sorry. Shall we go back to Wes? Do you have a follow-up?
No, I interrupted Wes before he got there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So one other thing with Hyperloop, though, the Hyperlocal, though, is doesn't it just defer the problem? If someone could actually get enough bandwidth from IoT devices to knock off the entire root server, it is conceivable that they could keep the servers down long enough to time out the keys, and then we're right back to where we started, unless you plan to implement filtering for the Hyperlocal updates, which would at least allow the Hyperlocal roots to keep updating while the rest of the root servers are on fire.
Now, personally, I think no, because the cost of keeping an attack goes exponentially high. So for attacking any target, not only root, website, or whatever, for first 30 minutes might be doable, but then second 30 minutes is much more expensive, and then keeping it for example, for a week, that's very hard, and that gives a lot of time to operators in between to deploy whatever mitigation mechanisms they have. So I don't think it's realistic that they can keep an attack so long that the cached zones are expired and the distribution doesn't work. But that's my personal opinion.
And, yeah, just to add to that, I mean, one of the points of Hyperlocal is that you're moving the provision of root server service closer to the source of the queries so that in the case of, like, an ISP that is deployed Hyperlocal, if there is an attack that's affecting the root service, which means the attack is against the resolver, that ISP has the ability within their own infrastructure to track down and mitigate the sources of the attack one way or another. That is sort of radically different to the situation we see at the root, where we have about 1,000 devices spread across the world that are not in a good position. They do not know who their customer is to go to that customer and say, hey, stop beating the crap out of me.
Wes, apologies.
No problem. I do have some concern over the focus so much on the root, because the reality is that the issue is much, much bigger. And, I think, TLDs, for example, I think if they were taken out, might actually have more of an end user impact than the root service. So I guess I would encourage you to keep pushing back. I suspect that the root kind of looks like a low-hanging fruit because it's more within reach, even though ICANN does have, some arrangements with most, TLDs that they could exert at least some help or pressure with. But I guess my real statement is, I would really encourage you to remind them of that, and then also, your efforts toward dealing with protocol extensions and other things that would actually help the DNS as a whole means that the whole tree will stand up better rather than just the very tip.
So the two answers to that. One, the root is the sort of the thing that ICANN.org has the greatest, because we run one of the root servers, sort of the greatest ability to influence, right? We can augment LRoot as we see fit. But the other answer is that the root is also unique, as far as I'm aware, in the DNS, in that in all other zones, the administration of this name servers for the zone are directly financially responsible, responsibility of the owner of the zone. In the case of the root server, that's not the case. The root server is operated by the name servers for the root are operated by 12 independent organizations, and there is no mechanism by which ICANN, the organization, can have influence other than saying please, please, to change the way the root servers are operated. We can ask politely, we can suggest, we can recommend, we can try throwing money at the problem. But the reality is that each of the independent organizations that are providing root service have to make the decision that's in their best business interest. Fundamentally, the root is different in that way, and it is, as far as I know, the only zone that that's true.
If I may. We understand that situation very clearly. We've been working on it for a number of years trying to resolve that. I think, and Wes, I'm going to try to channel you for channel Wes and some of the conversation we had earlier, is that I think what Wes was getting at was that while hyperlocal works for the root and for L, since ICANN can influence L, hyperlocal doesn't work necessarily for other TLDs that might come under attack. With the same attack that you've laid out here, hyperlocal doesn't work for them to help mitigate anything, and that is where it's quite possibly a quicker and larger impact, depending on the duration of the attack that was brought up earlier. So, comment.
Thank you. So, 2 points. One is I agree with that statement, but you have to keep in mind that Root also has or attracts political interests as well. So, attack against Root might have different angles than just being able to bring down part of internet for commercial gain. Or there will be at least a lot of visibility into that if someone does that. That's one. And second, just to follow up on this presentation. After this was presented to the board, basically the board tasked board technical committee to look into this report and ask for advice from rest of the community and come back to the board with what they think. The BTC doesn't advise the board, and this is not formal advice from at this point. They didn't request formal advice from, for example, RSAC and SSAC, but they would really want to get feedback, at least on this report, or if there is more, through BTC from RSAC, SSAC, and other possible interested constituencies. That BTC hasn't yet formed a meeting, so I think next week it will happen, and after that, both RSAC and SSAC will receive a request. So, and we will get a chance to basically mention all of these points. They will be all collected and presented to the board, just as a comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Kaveh.
Yep. And just to reiterate something that Kaveh said, from the board's perspective, their view, again, channeling them, is that if there was an attack against the root that had sufficient impact to disrupt resolution on the part of the end users as a whole, or even a significant portion, where significant might be one person who happens to sit on Pennsylvania Avenue, and while some people might appreciate that, the problem is that the board believes, rightly or wrongly, that would trigger concerns about ICANN's role in administering the stuff that ICANN does. So their interest is trying to protect ICANN's involvement in the operation of the Internet System of Unique Identifiers, of which providing root service is something that is coordinating. Root service is something that's specified in our bylaws, suggesting that we actually do have some role. If the congressional testimony occurs, it's most likely going to be someone from ICANN who is going to be the target of unhappiness as opposed to individual root server operators. This is a view of the board.
Thank you, David. So that's actually a perfect segue into my question that I did write down during this thing. So this was not pre-written. This I came up as you were talking. So in your words, you said a 10-minute outage results in congressional hearings and a bad day for ICANN and the board. We, RSAC, have stated that if one goes down, it really has no effect on the DNS as the whole. You know, that's a public document out there. Kind of my question really is, where along the spectrum of one to everything is the trigger for a bad day for ICANN?
That's a really good question that I don't think anyone has an answer to. You know, it isn't even, as we saw with Dyne, you know, Dyne wasn't down for everybody.
If I maybe rephrase the question towards the – and maybe this is to Kaveh. Kaveh, is the expectation of the board that no letters are down?
Actually, that also came up during the presentation. There was no clear answer, but the board refers to route taken down. So what does that mean? And that was one of the questions that I asked, as actually, like, what does that mean? The other thing which was proposed, I don't know by which board member, but that maybe we should also look into what will happen, assuming that it happens. So route goes down, whatever definition of that is, assuming it's all blackout. Or what will happen? So what is the reality of the situation after that? And how what people will do? How will they try to mitigate that? Nobody knows the answers to that, and that's actually something that we can work through our liaisons to the board to formulate the questions and then work on them in our constituencies, both SSEC and RSEC, to basically try to figure out and come up with what we think are the criteria. Or for example, what will happen? What is the scenario? Assuming route goes down, if we think that's a relevant question, because some people in the board said maybe if you understand that, that helps us to better understand the actions, possible actions. Or as someone suggested in RSAC, maybe the board just needs to acknowledge that's a risk and we sign it off because the impact is very high, but probability is really, really low. So we are comfortable signing it off. But there is not enough information to assess this this risk.
And with that, I'm afraid I'm going to have to run. I'm actually have to be up at the CSG meeting now. They're asking about the KSK rollover. So my colleague Matt may be able to answer any further questions. If not, feel free to drop me a note.
Thank you for the attendance, and thank you for fighting through the voice challenges.
Well, I think we've exhausted. Do you think we'd like some more time to discuss hyperlocal? We were going to delve into that, and we've had that. Any other questions regarding that? Then the other, if not, the other agenda item here says current planned research on the root server system by Okto. So Matt,
I'm sorry, Tripp, is it too late? 30 seconds on the hyperlocal. The thing, it wasn't completely obvious to me that the hyperlocal is not part of the mitigation. It allows you to survive the attack, but it doesn't help mitigate the attack. Where one of the things we've thrown around that I didn't realize hadn't sunk in was my board's talked about get 10,000 Raspberry Pis and throw them around the world, and somebody said, well, that's just like hyperlocal. But it isn't if you gave them all unicast addressing. So they would actually be creating a trillion tiny catchments that would make it hard for a DDoS attack.
Anycast.
What am I saying? Yes, Anycast. So, it's been a long week. So just that is a thought that, you know, that's not hideously expensive and you would get well ahead of this thing. Rather than there's no way to win the arms race, that's a crazy way to win it. It's like going after an aircraft carrier with drones. It's different, but it's worth thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thank you. Matt, do you want me to repeat what I said earlier? We're just curious to know what kind of research is Okto looking to do on the root server system. How can we help you? How can we partner with you? Would you like data? Whatever.
Sure. Thank you. Well, first, let me say thank you very much for the RFC 8145 data that at this point, I guess, 12 out of the 13 letters are submitting. That's very, very helpful in analyzing the data for the root KSK role. So thank you very much for that. And looking at that, we're going to continue to look at that as we approach October. I think in retrospect, we wish that were a different signal. And what Warren and Jeff and Joao are talking about with Sentinel, I think, is ultimately going to be a better way to measure, because user impact is what we really care about. But we have the data that we have at this point, so we're going to continue looking at that. If we can identify which of those addresses are ephemeral, belonging to VMs or containers, that would tend to indicate a lower impact, because by definition you can't have a bunch of users pointing at that as their resolver, because it's got to be just the machine itself using a self-contained resolver. So if we're able to show that from the data, I think that would help alleviate at least some concern, I would hope, that we have such high values at the moment for what percentage of the 8145 capable resolvers reporting are reporting only the old key, which hovers between now 20 and 25% higher than when we decided to postpone things back in last September. So that's one area of research that we're working on. In terms of things we've done recently, I don't know if some of you were at ORIC last week and saw Paul Hoffman's presentation on TLDs occurring, the frequency that they occur at the root, that was based on DIL data. So thank you again for everyone for contributing the DIL data, as well as some more real-time data. So that's an example of other work that we've done. But I think maybe your question is what can the root operators do to help with our research?
What are the questions are you looking to answer? Where's your research focus? And, you know, is there some way we can partner? How can we help? Maybe there's synergies in what we're doing here.
Sure. Well, as I said, the data is huge. So the statistics and the real-time 8145 data we're very grateful for, as well as everyone who contributes to DIDL. So I know I'm repeating myself, but those are very, very valuable. In terms of, like, specific other requests, I can't think of anything at the moment, but I can certainly take that back to the research team and relay, you know, the request, the interest from RSAC in possible partnering or and helping, and see what I come back with.
Does anyone else have any questions of Octo? Or do you have any questions of us?
I don't have any questions.
Let me check the Adobe room.
I have a quick one, or just a statement. Matt, at USC, I say we have a research project underway to develop some DDoS tools for protecting DNS critical infrastructure, and we are probably 4 to 6 months away from releasing some code for some of those, including some whitelisting type patterns that I think have never been looked at before, and we'd be happy to turn those over to you guys if you guys want to play with them, either in combination with Al or just by yourself at some point, just as an FYI.
Okay, thanks. I'd be interested in that. I mean, ultimately, that would be the ICANN's DNS engineering team that would decide, you know, whether or not to use those in production, but thank you. Yeah, please let me know.
I guess we're done. We adjourn early today. Thank you very much.
Few people complain about meetings ending early, so.
Okay, it's all right.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you all.